Blog Talk Radio.
Your goals are our goals, and your success makes us successful. You're listening to thinkbigradio.com, where big thinkers come to teach and learn. We'd like to thank you all for your continued support and spreading the word about thinkbigradio.com. Have you spread the word today?
Welcome, thinkbigradio.com listeners. Big here, your host today. Want to introduce CEO Jennifer Yarbrough. She's going to tell you a little bit about raising capital, tell you a little bit about her history, why she's able to tell you these different things, and hopefully we're going to share some things with you that you can take on to your next level. Jennifer, are you there?
I am. Thank you so much.
Oh, great. We've been looking forward for this interview here, but before we get started, let's make sure that everyone that's listening knows how to reach you. So please share all the contact information you have, anything that you've got going on, so that they'll be able to reach you after the show.
Awesome. Thank you so much. So my name is Jennifer Yarbrough, and I can be reached through my website, actually, J, D as in David, Yarbrough, YARBROUGH.com, JDYarbrough.com. And I'm super excited that today, actually, I am doing a free training on how to manage your donors and your cultivation plan. So if you go to the website and send me a quick email, I'll be happy to connect you to that webinar that's going to happen this afternoon at 11 a.m. Pacific. I'm in Southern California. And I'm also able to be reached via Facebook under Jennifer Yarbrough, LinkedIn, Jennifer Yarbrough, and also on other social media platforms under Jen the Grant Guru, Jen the Grant Guru. I started this work over 30 years ago, and I started out writing grants. So I tied in the Grant Guru just to kind of give homage to my humble beginnings. So thank you so much for, again, having me on your show, and I'm super excited to share with your audience.
So one of the things that we always start off with is introducing you to our audience as far as, you know, your family life. Are you from a small family, large family? You know, what's going on, so they'll get to just kind of, you know, have a feel about who you are.
I come from a pretty small immediate family, but a very large extended family. Both of my parents had 10 brothers and sisters on each side. So we've got lots of cousins.
Wow.
We all grew up together. We all went to high school together. There were five of us all in the same high school. We all went to college together. We all graduated from Tuskegee together. So while I have two brothers, I'm an only girl, but I've got lots of female cousins who are as close as sisters because, again, we were always together growing up. So I currently reside in Southern California. This has been my home for most of my life, and while I travel throughout the world and the country doing different things, home is California. Home is where it is. You know, I tell people, don't mind the little rumbling and shaking of the little earthquake. It'll only last a few seconds, and then it'll be over, and then it's sunny all the time. So I love it here. I love it here, and this is what I call home.
Yeah, I know what you mean about those earthquakes. The first time I experienced one in California, I didn't think it was anything. It kind of felt like a truck was going past the house, you know. And then later they were just like, we had an earthquake. I was like, oh,
yes.
Is that what that was? So let's talk about the very first time that you wrote a grant over 30 years ago. How did that happen?
It's a very interesting story. I was in college. I was doing a graduate school program in Tennessee. I was going to graduate school. My hope and aspiration at that time was to leave and go to Howard, to law school. I had graduated from Tuskegee. I was going to go and help out a friend in Tennessee. I got into school. I became an actual teacher, a professor, teaching a class on intro to sociology, which is at that time was my study. But during one of my class assignments, I had to write a grant. It was a semester assignment. And I must say, I didn't know what a grant was. I didn't have a nonprofit. I'm just flat out of college. I'm thinking, what is a grant? And where does this money come from? And I can tell you that in this class, there were probably 15 or 16 of us. Everyone broke out into study groups, and I was kind of left on my own. And I went to Mr. Spann, who was the executive director at the Kingsport Housing Authority. They oversaw five different communities there in Kingsport. And I went to Mr. Spann, and I said, I'm going to flunk this class, sure enough, because I don't know what a grant is. I have no clue where to start. And this man literally reached into his desk and put on the desk a proposal. It was an RFP. An RFP is a request for proposal for a drug and alcohol elimination grant from HUD. Again, I didn't know what any of that meant. He sent me to a workshop at the Kingsport Library where they were doing a free grant writing class. I went there to that workshop. It was a half-hour training. I walked out of there in tears because I was more confused because I didn't have a program. I didn't have a nonprofit. I didn't have a budget. I didn't have anything that was being required in the application. So it just didn't connect for me. He sent me to a second one. I walked out the same. And the thing that he said to me that I will always remember, he said to me, you can figure it out. You can figure it out. He didn't know enough to tell me. He did not know how to instruct me or coach me through it. He couldn't give me a clue. He just handed it to me. And it took me 6 weeks. It took me 2 weeks to read through it. The federal application at that time was huge. It took me 2 weeks to read through it, to understand the terms, the terminology, and I wrote it. I wrote it, and I was so naive. You know, this was before Google. There was no Google at the time. There was no internet that I could do searches. I had to literally do everything by hand. I didn't know anything. I was an intern, so I didn't know there were files kept on the resident. I literally was going door to door. I created my own survey, door to door, asking people, is there a problem with drugs here in the community? What type of problems are you having? I mean, I just kind of made it up in my mind of what randomly would I be investigating for drug and alcohol elimination. I'd never used drugs. I'd never lived in a public housing authority. So I didn't know, you know, I was making it all up. Long story short, I finished it. I completed it. And he told me to drive it to Nashville to the HUD office to submit it. And I did. And I turned it in, and I turned it into my class. And we were notified a month later that it was funded for $250,000. I was
wow. Now, just
that wrote.
Just to think that it took a month for something that extensive back then. I mean, before we continue, what's the average time now for a grant that's done correctly?
The average time, it depends on the funder. It can go anywhere from a few weeks to almost a year. It really depends upon it depends upon their review cycle. I've gone on to become a grant reviewer, so I've reviewed for many agencies. And so the determining factor is when they review, that when they put out the RFP, you have a date to submit the proposal. It then comes to a panel of reviewers. The reviewers then are gathered, and we are random. You know, we have no connections to any of the organizations, so it's very fair, very impartial. We review those proposals. And then we submit those that rise to the criteria for funding out of the hundreds that we get. There may be four or five people that are reviewing. We bring to the table those that we have viewed as credible for particular for funding that meet the requirements. Those then are taken before the panel for consideration for final funding decisions.
And so when you say the word credible, one of those meaning that everything was completed correctly, because some things may be credible but just not completed correctly, so you have to maybe push those to the back or send out a letter or something?
That's correct. There is a criteria that everyone has to apply, right? So you must be a 501c3. You must live in a certain state. You must serve a certain population. Those are general criteria that everyone must meet. But then there is a criteria of who's actually going to get funding. And that's what most people don't recognize. Most people just think, oh, my gosh, I meet the initial criteria. I'm going to get the money. But they don't realize that there is a further criteria. There's a scoring process. This is how we then read through to determine who's actually going to get the funding. Did you answer and respond to the need? Did you articulate your impact well? Did you write your budget in line with what is allowable or eligible expenses. And those kinds of things most people don't know about, which is why only 20% of grant applications are actually reviewed. The other 80 are generally not reviewed because people don't meet those criteria that are also required.
Wow. And now back to the beginning. So you say within a month after you were in school, you guys got a letter, and it basically said, hey, you've been funded $250,000.
Yes.
Carry on, please. I'm just going back because I jumped ahead. Sometimes, you know, you think about something and say, I need this answer now.
Well, and again, most people don't realize that when they present the proposal, the process that happens. Generally, people say, oh, my gosh, Jen, it's the end of June. I need a grant going into July. I need to write a grant right now, as if they can go to an office and get a check, right? That's not what happens. So I learned quickly that part of the process. Obviously, I got an A in the class. I was the only one who wrote a real grant. And Mr. Spann recognized, oh, my gosh, I got me a little girl here who can write grants, and I'm being paid $4.25 as an intern. He then gives me a second grant to write, which was a literacy grant for the state of Tennessee to improve and increase literacy in public housing, because their thought was that if we can improve and increase literacy in the public housing community, more of these individuals will then go on, complete high school, get a higher degree, then move out of public housing and break this generational curse. And they attach that to education. So their thought was, if the inner generations were not finishing high school, they were not literate, they were not then able to go out and support themselves, that these funds would enable this generational process to be broken through education. So again, I'm doing a survey, I'm knocking on doors, what is the highest level of education in the house, you know, how many children participate with their homework assignments. Again, I'm making this whole thing up because in my mind, I don't know anything about, you know, I'm in college. I appreciate education. So I created this process, and I went through door to door, knocked on doors. People were very willing to talk to me. And again, I didn't have Google. I had to create my own need. I had to substantiate that in this community, this particular housing community, these are the real stats that we're addressing. And that worked. It worked. It was funded for close to $1 million. It was a 2-year grant. And the process was that they were going to work with the public library to have these individuals now go to the library, read. There were incentives and rewards given to these young people to complete their reading processes. Tutors that were coming in to helping them with reading and comprehension, you know, phonics at that time, I don't think it was called Hooked on Phonics. It was probably called something else back then. But that whole process of how do we inspire these individuals to embrace education and recognize that education could be a key component to their moving and transitioning from public housing. And then from there, I wrote another grant for a bank. A bank that was interested in moving individuals from public housing into home ownership. And I went through and I had to do another survey finding out who was ready, who understood money management, who understood the process and was willing to take on the responsibility of home ownership. And we identified 27 that met a criteria that I came up with. And we were able to successfully move those 27 individuals from public housing into their home ownership with a lot of follow-up care that I had integrated into that process. So that's my humble beginnings. That was a long, long time ago, and many, many, many opportunities since then.
You know, I like how you not only assisted the people with the public housing and as far as getting their own homes, but you also set up a program afterwards so that they would have help and if they had any questions. Because a lot of times when we think about helping people, we think about the process of, well, let me take you from here to here, and then once you get there, you're good, you're on your own, and we move on to the next people. But to put a process in place that allows them who have been helped to continuously have, you know, that type of assistance, you know, that's something that I think that a lot of programs need, because
especially if you're a continuous learner, then you definitely need to be able to reach back and ask your mentors, because I'm assuming that really you were a mentor for the entire program and the people in it.
Yes, and what's really interesting is that Mr. Spann, you know, he was a longtime executive director, but he could not mentor me. He couldn't tell me what I was doing right. He couldn't coach me through the process. He just kind of entrusted me to figure it out. He would always say, I'd go to him and I'd say, Mr. Spann, what do I do? He goes, oh, you'll figure it out. You'll figure it out. And the other part of that is that he was also on the board at Northeast State Technical Community College there in Blountville, Tennessee. He was on the board at the time. And, again, I'm an intern, you know, and he saw a potential in me that I just was thinking, I just cannot wait to get out of here to go to law school, right? I'm never going to do this again. I'm going to law school, and I'm just, you know, biding my time while I'm this intern. You know, I need this little extra change to pay for books or food or whatever. And he then took me over to the college, and he said, this little girl is smart, and if you all have needs of writing or fundraising, he lent me out to them, right? He lent me out to them, and I wrote a program for the I wrote a program for the visually impaired individuals there at the college. I worked in their advancement department, and I did their newsletters, I did their community outreach, I did their events, I did their sponsorship. You know, I was just doing what I was told to do. And in my mind, I'm thinking, I'm going to Howard. I'm never going to have to do this again. And I ultimately left, was on my way to Howard, had moved to D.C., and 2 weeks before school started, I was hit by a drunk driver. By a drunk driver, and I was laid up for a year. So all the money that I had saved had gone to expenses. And now a year later, I'm able to walk, and I'm able to go out and work. And at that time, you know, you had a lot of temp agencies. You didn't have Google to look for a job. You know, you couldn't go to jobs.com or anything like that. So I had to go to a temp agency, and they said, what do you do? I said, well, I can do a little administrative work. And they put me in a engineering firm. It was an engineering firm, and I was answering the phones. I was ordering lunch one day, bringing the lunch into the boardroom, and they were talking about doing a grant. They were having a conversation about applying for a grant and how this engineering firm was going to be one of the for-profit businesses in partnership. And I'm laying the food out, and I'm listening, you know, kind of listening, not listening. And they mention a grant, they mention something in regard to the criteria, and in my mind I thought, that doesn't sound like what I'm familiar with. And I just made a statement. I just said, oh, that's really interesting. I hadn't heard that before. And I just kind of kept doing what I was doing, and they looked at me and they're like, do you know anything about grants? And I said, well, I know a little something. You know, I'm not a grant writer. I know a little something. They sat me down. And they said, read this and tell me what it – because, you know, engineers only know engineering things. You know, we know what we know. The things that we don't know, we just don't know. And they said, do you know how to interpret this? And I'm like, yeah, I think I can interpret it. They pulled me on that team, and I wrote with them that very technical grant, all about engineering stuff that I don't know anything about. But I understood what the RFP was. I knew what the RFP meant. I knew what they were requiring and what they were going to have to meet in order to partner, because I had built partnerships. I had built programs. I was like, I'm confident. I know what they're asking you for. If you stay in this line. And they were successful. And I, you know, I was getting my little check every Friday, as you do with the temp agency. And I was like, okay, I'm going back to answer the phones, you know. And it just became, the further and further I got away from going to law school, the more in-depth I started then going to apply for grant writing jobs. And because I felt like, well, that's all I know how to do. I don't know how to do anything else is write grants. And so that began my career. I started out as a grant writer professionally in jobs. They hired me to be the grant writer, and I got tired of doing that after 8 years of sitting in a room. Again, there was no social media. It was just constant writing day after day after day. And then I asked the executive, I said, can I please come out of this closet? Can I do something else? And they got me involved in engaging with donors and building and designing programs and doing special events and community collaborations and developing and designing partner volunteers and training them. I then have gone
I want to comment on something that you said so that our listeners will really, really get this particular part. You basically said, I asked. And a lot of times people they won't ask for what they want. And I think that you miss out on so many opportunities by not asking. I'd rather miss out on an opportunity by asking than thinking I can't ask for that and then never have the chance. You know, so and that opened up everything else. Now, just real quick, was there a point when you became passionate about this? Because you appear to be passionate now, whereas the first few years you were just like, Jesus, I'm, you know, what am I going to do with my life? This is not what I want to do. What changed you over?
I think what changed me over was when I worked for the Girl Scouts. I worked for the local chapter of the Girl Scouts, and I was a Girl Scout. I was a Brownie. At 5 years old, my mother had put me in a program, in the Brownie program, and we were living in Beloit, Wisconsin, and we were the only African American family on the block. We were the only African American family in my school. I did not have any friends who looked like me. And my mother put me in this Brownie program, and I was miserable because I would invite these girls to my parties, but they never would come. And they would not invite me to their parties, right?
Wow.
And Mrs. Spooner, who was the troop leader, all the girls would be down in the basement playing, and I'd be up at the counter with her, and she would say to me, she said, you know, you can be whatever you want to be. You can do whatever you want to be. You can do whatever. Mm-hmm. She said, you are smart, you are beautiful. And this is a woman who doesn't look like me, but she's pouring into me. And at five, I just want friends. You know, I don't know
right.
her in the program. I don't recognize that this is a part of, you know, her helping me for the future. In my mind, I'm thinking, I don't have any friends. Why won't they play with me? You know, but my mother wouldn't let me out. She would not, you know, and I don't even believe I was able to articulate at the time what I was feeling.
Mm-hmm.
But many years later now, I'm working for the organization, and all of those thoughts came running to my mind. And
wow.
I'm seeing these young girls who were in the program who don't recognize they're in a program. And the whole model of Girl Scouts is build girls strong. That's the model, build girls strong. And it was at that moment that there was a shift, because I thought to myself, Mrs. Spooner told me I could do anything I wanted to do at five. And I
right.
remembered that.
Wow.
And at five, if you could tell someone that they can be whatever they want, they may not understand it at the time, but
uh-huh.
later they will remember that. And then I went to work for, they promoted me to go work for the national headquarters. And I got real passionate then, because I was able to go to the Girl Scout organization throughout the country and internationally training. And I was close to Milwaukee, and I called my mom and I said, Mom, where did Mrs. Spooner live? My mother's like, what are you talking about? You know, I don't know. That was like years ago. I got in a car and I drove to Mrs. Spooner's house. I found my way. I was on the phone with my mom. I was like, I think I remember this. I mean, I'm five. I was in a back seat. You know,
right,
back then you had
right.
the big old cars. You couldn't even see out. So I'm making my way through what I remember. And I get to the house and I said, this is the house. I just knew in my gut this was the house. I knock on her door and her grandson answers the door. And she comes out and she looks at me and she calls me by name. She said, I know who you are.
Wow.
I burst into tears. I hugged her neck, and I said, I had to come back and tell you that because of you, I really believe I can do anything. It's because of you. I hugged her neck, and her husband was sitting in the same seat that I remember when I was five, and he
wow.
went and pulled out a box of all the things we had made, and my dolls, my little popsicle stick doll, and all that stuff was still in that box. And it was at that moment I thought, this is my passion. This is my passion.
Man,
that a nonprofit poured into me. A nonprofit convinced me that a young black girl who had no friends could do anything. And I believe it. Now I believe it. And so it became passionate from there.
But now, we're at that point of the interview where we're getting close toward the end. But what I'd like for you to do is the first thing is really share how they can reach you and the program that you have that shares your passion.
Thank you all again for this opportunity. So you can reach me through jdyarbrough.com. That's J-D as in David, Yarbrough, Y-A-R-B-R-O-U-G-H.com. I also have a conference that I'm doing. I'm on a tour. I've created a nonprofit startup to sustainability tour. My passion is to now pour into those executive leaders who have a desire to have a thriving, sustainable nonprofit organization, that you start with passion, but you move to a plan for sustainability, a plan for
Beautiful.
Sustainability. So I help you understand what your passion is and what's fundable about your passion. What is it that would attract a donor, that would attract a funder, that would attract a partner and a sponsor? Based upon my knowledge of having worked with thousands of organizations across the world, I want to now help these grassroots startup nonprofits, or those who've had a nonprofit and are having a hard time turning the corner. And so I'm coming to Dallas. July 18th, I will be in Dallas. I will be in Georgia, July 27th. I will be in Jacksonville, Florida, August 9th. But in Dallas, I come, I train for 2 or 3 hours. It's only $25. $25, you get about 2 or 3 hour training of how to start, how to fundraise, how do you put your board together, how do you strategize for the year-end goals, financial goals being met, and I'm going to be there to answer all of your questions. You can go to Eventbrite, eventbrite.com, and look for those areas of Dallas, McDonough, Georgia, and Jacksonville, Florida right now. More being added every day, and those
right.
Eventbrite. And then I have a virtual seat. If you can't come and be there virtually, you can also come, or in person, you can also grab a virtual seat and join us through a live stream for only $10 from where you are and get the information as well.
Okay, great. We're going to make sure for our listeners out there that we post this on your actual page, that they'll be go to hear this archived version. So we'll update that sometime today as well. And I just want to say thank you for coming in. Coming on. I know it's like 9 a.m. out there this morning. You've got a lot planned to do, especially with the thing that you're going to have going on in the next couple of hours. Is there anybody that you'd like to thank at this moment?
I would like to thank my mom for putting me in the brownies. I would like to thank you. I would love to thank you for reaching out and giving me this opportunity to share my passion and hopefully to inspire others that you can do it. Just ask for help, ask for guidance. You too can do this. Obviously, I want to thank the people that follow me, that participate in what I do. I'm grateful. I'm humble for where I came from, where I believe that I'm going now, and I'm grateful. Thank you. Thank you so much for this opportunity.
Well, we definitely appreciate your time. We hope to definitely, of course, work with you in the future. For all of you guys out there with the nonprofits or trying to figure out the best way to get your passion, $25 is not a lot to get training from someone with the experience and someone that has worked across the country and in different countries, Jennifer Yarbrough. At this, guys, we're going to end our show, and we love you for listening, and hopefully you guys will be able to learn more. Thanks, Jennifer.
Thank you.
You're listening to ThinkBigRadio.com, where big thinkers come to teach and learn. Your goals are our goals, and your success makes us successful.